Hi, I'm Brad Linscott, and thanks for joining me on part 12 of our series here as we look to understand how Microsoft Support troubleshoots .NET applications in the production environments. Now, in previous couple of sessions, part 10 and part 11, we laid the foundation for troubleshooting memory pressure issues by understanding virtual memory and a virtual address space. That was in part 10. In part 11, we took a look at how to use that information and apply it towards a dump that was taken of a .NET application under memory pressure to narrow down in that dump where the problem might be. We didn't find root cause, but we were able to prove that memory pressure was coming from .NET, in addition to the fact that .NET code was the part that actually pushed the process over the edge and caused the out-of-memory exception. In this part, we're going to go even further. We're going to actually take a repro of an application that throws an out-of-memory exception. We're going to use what we learned in part 10 and part 11 of this series, and then we're going to find actual root cause of the problem. So without further ado, here we go. I've got a sample application here in ASP.NET that throws an out-of-memory exception. It doesn't just throw it, it actually consumes all the memory in the virtual address space, or as much as possible. The call returned. I got my JIT debugger window here asking me which debugger do I want to debug the application. I'm going to say neither one. I want to take a look at my event log here and see that, yes, sure enough, I do have my out of memory exception that just occurred. I do have a call stack here, but I'll tell you from experience, that call stack is either A, not always there, or B, if it is there, it's not always healthy. So I'm going to ignore that for now and proceed like I would if this was a production application and I didn't have a call stack there or was not healthy. What would I do next if I had an application that had already gotten an out-of-memory exception once and might happen again? Well, I would tell my customer to go ahead and set up a debug diag rule to get a dump of the process. In this particular case, it's a web application pool, whenever it crashes. So I set my sample pool there, and I'm going to accept the default choices here on all the rest of the steps of this wizard, and now I've got my crash rule there that is currently active. Great. Okay, so now I'm going to try to repro the issue. Because debug diag is already attached, I would not expect to get that Visual Studio JIT debugger window that pops up. Let's take a look if the event log shows anything new since 7.04. And sure enough, we get another out of memory exception. Good, so we have reproduced our problem. We should have a dump. Let's take a look at view and debug diag logs folder. And there we go. It's going to be in this folder where we created our crash rule, and wow, I've got lots of dumps here, so I'm going to go ahead and stop the browser before we get any more. Now, all of these, the reason I've got three here, notice that they've all got different PIDs, is because once IS crashes, a new pool spawns up trying to handle the request that was sent in, and each one of them crashes, so that's why I kept getting different dumps. So I'll open up any one of these in the debugger and see what we can see. Okay, I got a Win7 machine here, eight processors, 32-bit. What we did before was we took a look at bang address dash summary in part 11 of this series. I see here that I've got the biggest chunk of memory is in free. Not necessarily contiguous. As a matter of fact, I can guarantee you it's not contiguous. 2.3 gig. The next one is this unknown at a gig and a half. So 2.3 gig free, largest contiguous free is 867 meg. I still get an out of memory. Wow, that must have been a one large allocation request that came in. Okay, so let's see if we can continue to search and find out what caused our out of memory. I'm going to run bang CLR usage -v and look at the bottom here to see how much memory the CLR is responsible for. I see here that it's a gig and a half. That matches up very close, almost a gig and a half. Very closely with what Bang and Dress Dash Summary shows. Yeah, for the unknown bucket, which does contain .NET, at just over a gig and a half. So .NET is putting on the memory pressure here. If I take a look at Bang eheap-gc and see if I can just take a look at the different heaps here, and sure enough, same as I believe that's the same as what we had in Bang CLR usage. We'll call that a gig in the GC heaps. I see one heap here that stands out to me. That's heap, in this case, heap number two. Specifically, I've got a large object heap segment here of a gig. Well, that's pretty much what all of our heaps together are, right? Yes, it is. So all the memory is in that one large object heap segment. Let's see if we can take a look. I like to take a look at dump heap dash stat for these memory pressure issues to see what kinds of objects are down here near the bottom. Now, the output of dump heap dash stat is sorted in increasing order by total size of every object type. Okay. So in this particular case, I've got a gig of strings, which is actually the total size of all the objects put together. It is not uncommon to find system.strings, object arrays, byte arrays down here near the bottom, and because of that, I often don't troubleshoot these kinds of issues by trying to find where these strings or arrays are rooted. Well, why is it so common? Well, think about it. When you write your own classes and you have your own fields in there, how many of those fields are actually of type string? How many are arrays? And that's the way it is for a lot of the objects. A lot of them have members and fields that are strings and arrays. So it's not uncommon to find a ton of them in any given process that's loaded the CLR. So that's why, because there's so many of them, I typically don't spend time trying to narrow down and figure out which one I need to GC root. And plus, GC root, given the number of root trees that you have and the complexity of them, itself can take a long time to run. So that's why I try to avoid running GC root on some of these strings. Just out of curiosity, let's see if we dump out all the objects in the managed heap that are at least 100,000 bytes. And wow, this is a surprise here. Okay, so one string object that's taking up all our memory. I can tell you from experience that it is very uncommon in a production type application to find things as clean and neat as this, where you got one type that's taking up all the memory and one object of that type. This is a simple repro, so it's not surprising that we get something like this. But normally in production, I wouldn't find this. If I did, I would just do a bang GC root on that one object and see where it's rooted and go from there. But since that's almost never the case where I have one object that takes up all the memory in production, I'm going to proceed as if this is production and I have to employ some other tactics. I want to see if I can find, well, let's see, we notice here that the currently active thread is thread 38. Whenever you open up a dump from a crash, it's going to open on the thread that threw the fault. So let's see if we can get some more information about this particular thread. Okay. He is a finalizer thread, and we see where he's raising an exception up here, throwing an out-of-memory exception. Okay. What's interesting that it's the finalizer, you don't often see that with memory issues. So I wonder what else we can take. What about the managed call stack? Bang CLR stack. No managed call stack, not a surprise. What about managed objects on this stack? Well, we got our out of memory exception. Let's see if we can do a DO or a PE on him and find out if we get any kind of partial call stack. And in this case, we actually do. For those of you who watched quickly at the event log, you'll see, hey, this call stack here looks very familiar with what I saw in the event log. And I can also tell you that not only do you not always get a helpful call stack in the event log, you also don't always get a very helpful one with using Bang PE. If this is all I had to go on, if this is in production, I'd stop right here and I'd take a look at my class.finalize to see what he's doing with string builders. Some of you have probably been through an exercise like this before and already know what you're going to find. But I'm going to continue to proceed as if this is production and I did not get a helpful call stack from this output of Bang PE. What would I do next? Well, I don't have a managed call stack to help me. I don't have, except for this PE part here, I don't have a native call stack to help me. What else might I do? Well, what I've done in the past is if this is a situation to where the issue is going to reproduce itself within a day or two, and I want to get another dump, but this time, instead of waiting until the call stack gets to the point to where it's actually gone through the frame to throw the out of memory and then have all this on the call stack, I'd like to see if I can get a call stack that shows what kind of allocation request was being made right before we actually threw that out of memory exception. Is there a way we can do that? And the answer is yes. Come over here and search on GC break on OOM. GC break on out of memory. I'm finding the knowledge base article from our knowledge base support area. And this is what I want right here, the registry key. I can enter in this registry key. I can set my value to 2 and get a break in the debugger. My debugger in this case is debug.diag. I can use debug.diag to automate the process of dumping out my application whenever I get a break. It's a debug break exception. So let me first start up regedit. And this said local machine software, Microsoft. Now in my case, I've got a 32-bit application pool. So I'm going to go on the WoW 6432 node. Microsoft .NET framework, and I create a new D word. Spell it correctly, GC break on OOM. Make sure and spell it correctly so that our repro works. Okay. I'm going to run another IS reset to make sure everything goes as smoothly as possible. And I'm going to remove this rule and create a brand new one that takes into account my debug break. So I specify an IIS application pool, my particular application pool, and I'm going to click on the exceptions button here. Add an exception. Select my debug breakpoint exception. Get a full dump and get 1. So this is what my crash rule looks like. There's my breakpoint exception right there, and I get a full user dump. I only need 1. So I click OK, OK. Take the rest of the defaults in the wizard, and I've got my crash rule. To make things a little bit easier, I'm going to delete these other 2 dumps that I did not look at. And debug.diag now shows me that I've got that 1 dump from the last crash rule that I had. Okay, let's see if we can reproduce the problem. Wait for my page to come up, and when it does, I'll go ahead and click it. I'm going to monitor just so I know here, and we can decrease the time here. Wow, we already got our debug break. So we got a dump here that was created on my first chance breakpoint exception. So it worked, and I'm getting other dumps here based on the crashes that are occurring. So I'm going to shut down my browser. And I've already taken a look at the crash dump. So when I was able to get some helpful information from it in this case, but let's see how things look differently in the dump that was created based on the debug breakpoint from GC break on OOM. I just want to do a real quick check here to make sure that my repro symptoms are consistent. Bang address dash summary. Sure enough, I still get my 2 gig free. Largest contiguous free is 800 meg. Bang e heap dash gc. Oh, I said tc, but it still did it. There's my 1 heap, in this case heap 4. It has a large object heap segment with all my memory. Down here at the bottom, sure enough, there we are. Now, how does my call stack look different now that I got the dump right before the exception was actually thrown? The bottom of it looks the same, still in the finalizer thread, but the top of it Very different. Very different. We see here we're trying to actually allocate space whenever that debug break is encountered right here. And when this happens, we should always get a good managed call stack to help us determine what the problem is. And this should look familiar, and it does. It looks like what we saw in the event log, as well as the bang PE output from the crash dump. But again, you don't always get that nice, pretty helpful information from the event log or from bang PE. So this is what I would do in those cases. And some earlier segments of .NET debugging for the production environment in this series, we took a look at if you've got a particular frame in a call stack, how do you determine the assembly from which some of these frames arise? We went through how to find that, as well as if you didn't have the source code, how do you reflect the source so that you can find out what the pseudocode looks like and continue your troubleshooting? How do you do that? I won't go through the time to do that in this case since I've already done it. I don't remember the episode. It was one of the episodes, either 3, 4, 5, or 6. Instead, I'll jump straight to the source code since I actually have that. And we'll see what actually is going on here and why we've got such a huge string. Before we do that, let's see what other objects are on, just out of curiosity, just to investigate what else is going on here. I'm not able to find any other managed objects on this call stack. What happens if I take a look at, let's see, we did find, I did find a very large string. Did I actually run that in here? I don't think I did that. So let's take a look at bang dump heap dash min on 100,000. All right, there we go. And we've got our 1 gig string. We've got our address there. If you wanted to know the size of any particular object, you can always run bang obj size on the address, and there you'd get it. 1 gig. Great. Okay, let's see. So let's go to my class .finalize and see what we can see from the source code. I've got my source. I open it up. There's my class. And here's the destructor, the finalizer. And yes, we're in an endless loop where all we do is we append a string builder onto itself. I started it with a text file here, and it just kept appending to itself. But what are the logistics behind this? I mean, we understand it's going to get bigger and bigger and eventually but what are the logistics behind how a string builder grows? And how can we put that together with what we see here if we take a look at our bang address output? Cooperate, there we go. And we see here that our largest contiguous free is 900, almost 900 meg. What was the deal here? Well, we know that we've got one string in here that is a gig. What happens in a string builder? Let's do search on string builder and capacity. Let's look at a more recent version of the framework. And let's look here in the section for setting the capacity and length. What you'll see here is that whenever you create a string builder, there's going to be a buffer, a backing buffer behind it to handle the string that you put in there. Whenever that buffer is blown, wherever the capacity is exceeded, behind the scenes, String Builder creates another buffer that is twice the size of the original one. And it continues to do this until what happens is what you saw here, which is it doesn't have any more memory. So we have a string. In our case, we know of a gig. I can scroll down here to the bottom of it. And there we go. And our largest contiguous free we saw from bang address was only 900 meg. So in this case, in order to satisfy the allocation request, another string of 2 gig, twice the size of this one, was going to have to be created when our largest contiguous free is only 900 meg. So that's why we get an out of memory, even though we've got a lot of free space, we don't have enough contiguous free in order to satisfy the allocation request that came in. And that's how we get to the bottom of this one. These are some of the techniques that I employ when I'm looking at high memory pressure issues, along with what we covered in parts 10 and 11 of this series. I hope it helps you guys troubleshoot some of your out-of-memory exceptions as well. If you want us to take a look at some of the other issues that you might be experiencing, send feedback on some of these different postings on Channel 9, and the next time we do some recordings, we'll take a look at them. Thanks.